I think when I tell this story, it's almost like a little bit of PTSD because I'm like, why did I keep going? Why did I even, like, I could have stopped because Travel Channel had a same show, which they canceled after one airing. I could have stopped because I had no idea what I was doing and I had no more money left. Mm. But I didn't. And I always look back on that girl and I'm like, damn, girl, you did it. I don't know how you did it, but you did it.
What up, travelers? Or for this episode, I'm also going to say, what up, dancers? This episode of Travel With Meaning is both for the travelers, it's for dancers, it's really all of us. Now, this is the podcast where we talk to artists, entertainers, chefs, entrepreneurs, and travel industry experts to hear the travel stories that have impacted their lives and their careers. I'm Mike Scheibel, and my guest on today's episode is four-time Emmy Award-winning host, executive producer, and the creator of the TV show Bare Feet. It's on public TV stations all over. Now, I could do some justice by describing the show, but I'm going to let Michaela do a little better job.
Bare Feet is as much about the dance as it is about the music, the history, the costumes, the sweat, the strength, the expression, the beauty, and the stories that surround these cultural traditions.
So with that, let's welcome to the Travel With Meaning podcast, Michaela Milazzi.
Hi, Mike.
So I've been really excited about this conversation for so many reasons. I've watched your show and followed you for years. When did you catch the travel bug?
Yeah.
And what was travel like for you as a kid?
I come from a blue-collar family. I come from an immigrant family. And I grew up with my grandparents living in Italy. And we would call them every Sunday on the phone and talk to them. And they were a voice on the other line of the phone. But for four summers of my pre-adult life, when I was a kid, I was really lucky to be able to go to Italy with my whole family. So my sister, my parents, and we would stay for about a month. And it was work. It wasn't like we're going to the beach and hanging out and just, you know, vacation. We were on my grandparents' farm. We were killing the chickens. We were slaughtering the rabbits. We were jarring the tomatoes. We would be able to go to the beach because we lived by the sea. But it was really this life of living there and working there and being part of the community. And I think that really impacted me as a traveler in that that's how I travel now. I decided to study Italian and I studied abroad the summer between my sophomore and junior year of college. I caught the travel bug real fast and was like applying for more scholarships to study abroad and would find really inexpensive ways to keep traveling. And then when I became a dance teacher, I realized I could use dance as a way to travel. So I started teaching abroad in the summers. Even before I was a dance teacher, I worked in the music industry and I loved that I was able to travel. And especially with bands, I worked with in management and it was like this rock star lifestyle is kind of crazy, but I could never sit still. Even as a kid, I couldn't sit still. When I work, I can't just sit at a desk. Like I need to move. So I was about 19 when I caught the travel bug and I haven't sat still since, really.
Growing up, you know, spending that time in Italy with family and really seeing not just the tour side, but the real side. Were there times where you were like, you know, this sucks? Or like, were you just always kind of into it and seeing that this is just a different lens of the way people live?
I think people need to remember the word travel. The root of the word comes from the French travail, which means to work, right? So travel wasn't always easy. Yeah, of course, there were moments where it's like, I don't want to have to do that, but we had to. There was no choice. I was a brat. I was like, I'm the youngest. My sister can attest to this. I'm such a little brat. Or they think I am. I think I'm okay.
It's just a wonderful appreciation of not only of family, of culture, of customs, but of what that experience really planted in you.
Yeah.
To allow you then to later, you know, do what you're doing now, which is just a beautiful story.
So my grandmother always wanted to be an actress. I'm not an actress. What you see on the show is me being myself. I get to play myself and be ridiculous and silly and emotional and all these things that I am. But my grandmother was this, and she still is this amazing storyteller. She would change her voice and mimic people. And she really impacted me on how I heard stories and loved telling stories. And so going to Italy, she was always telling us all these amazing stories and rhymes and old Italian sayings. But then as a kid, I was a performer. And my family now, they're like, you're doing exactly what you used to do when you were a kid. Now you just get paid for it.
Step forward and here we are later, four Emmys and everything else. Walk us through like this process of what it was, what was your vision? You know, you take on these customs and these dances and you get to know these people. And it looks like such a beautiful way to immerse yourself in a community, immerse yourself amongst people. So I'm curious, like, I guess getting into the show and kind of what was that transition?
So I had an aha moment. I woke myself up in the middle of the night in January of 2010. And I had this vision, literally, like it was like projecting out of my eyeballs onto the wall in front of me of what Bare Feet looks like today.
Mm.
I saw the show. I saw me dressed up in costume. I saw my crew. I saw ads on the subway. Like it was like my life was flashing before my eyes kind of thing. And I turned to my bedside table. I always keep a notebook by my bed forever. I've always done that. And I just started scribbling chicken scratch. I'm like, I'm going to make a show where I travel and dance. And then I went back to bed and I woke up the next morning and I forgot that I had this incredibly intense vision. And then I looked to my bedside table and there's this notepad. And I was like, oh my God, yes, I'm going to make a TV show where I travel and dance around the world. This is it. And at the time, I was a dance teacher and a performing artist. I had just quit fairly recently working in corporate in the music industry. And my boyfriend at the time was like, you're crazy. You know, this is insane. I'd never been on camera. I didn't know anything about television. But I saw it so vividly that it literally woke me up.
Mm.
And I knew it was a really good idea. And I didn't know of anybody else who was doing anything like it. I love to dance and I'm like my grandmother, I'm very good at mimicking people. So that's really the skill that I'm using. But from that interaction of dance came these beautiful connections. And that's where I was like, this is this like skeleton key that opens every door for me in the world of travel, in the world of culture. So that's where it started, where the idea was planted. I went to NYU for music. So I had a lot of friends who worked in entertainment and they connected me with producers and executives. And at the time, they were all old white men. And the dream was to be on Travel Channel. Again, this was back in 2010 when Travel Channel actually still aired travel content. And I kept getting the same answer from people saying, these decision makers, these gatekeepers, which by the way, they should have never given me a show. I'd never been on camera. I had no TV background, hosting background. There was no YouTube, but it wasn't what it was today. And so I kept hearing, it's an interesting idea, but you're definitely not going to be the host because you just don't fit. I'm not tall, blonde hair, blue eyed, you know, I wasn't willing to just wear a bikini in every shot, you know, whatever that was. And they said, and even if you did sell this, you would probably just get creator rights and sell it off and then it would be shelved and no one would see the light of day of it. Because that's what happens in television. I didn't know any better. So I thought, screw it. I'm going to do it myself. And I hired friends who went to NYU Film School. I reached out to my grandmother and I said, look, I have this idea for a show. Nonna Pina, you meet her in our show. And I said, why don't we start with my own culture that I understand? I kind of know the language well enough. I know the dance group. I'm related to half the town. Like, I had the aha moment in January and in July was this wheat harvest festival. And I said, we're going to go. And we stayed in Nonna's little farmhouse. It was a crew of four of us, including myself. And we filmed for about a week. And so it was this like beautiful family again. We're in the place where I really fell in love with travel, fell in love with my culture. And for years I was working on this project and they didn't see anything come out of it. We found out 2 weeks after filming that Travel Channel had signed an identical show. And I signed a year's contract with them. They either wanted me to pay $30,000 to get out of the contract or wait out my year's contract. So in that year, I started a blog about Bare Feet and I would travel through New York City. And that's where I learned how to really start storytelling because I had to. I think when I tell this story, it's almost like a little bit of PTSD because I'm like, why did I keep going? Why did I even... Like I could have stopped because Travel Channel had a same show, which they canceled after one airing. I could have stopped because I had no idea what I was doing and I had no more money left, but I didn't. And I always look back on that girl and I'm like, damn girl, you did it. I don't know how you did it, but you did it. We're coming out with season 6 now, which will be 52 episodes of Bare Feet on PBS starting in November.
I have to say this. And the reason it works is because it is from that authenticity, genuine space.
Yeah.
You had that aha vision moment. That's the stuff that really fires all of us
up. Yeah.
And that's why you are still here. So 6 seasons, like this is remarkable to say out loud, 4 Emmys, 6 seasons, that girl, you created something that you believe in, but also listeners, travelers, I want you to understand that like you can do anything. And we talk about, you know, I think sometimes there are the three things that hold people back from traveling. It's nobody to go with, no money, no time. And there's excuses and there's, you know, answers for every one of those things. You kept going. And so these six seasons, there's so many people and experiences. Is there one dance that stands out to you? Is like, oh my God, let me just tell you about this.
I truly love doing our New York seasons. We've done three seasons throughout New York City because New York, it's my home. This is how I see my city. You know, I come from an immigrant community. I feel very connected to other immigrant communities because of that shared experience. One in particular for this season, we film with the Garifuna community. Now, a lot of people don't even know who the Garifuna people are. There are about 250,000 people in the Bronx alone that claim Garifuna heritage. They were originally called the Black Caribs, which was people from Mali. They've brought over to St. Vincent, the Isle of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, mixed with the local Arawaks, indigenous Arawaks, and then were exiled by British colonizers coming over and exiled into Honduras. And there were about, I think, only 2,500 that had survived in the late 1700s. And now, from Honduras, Belize, Guatemala, and Nicaragua, there are about 500,000 Garifuna and 250,000 here in New York. So it's an incredible story of resiliency, of survival, of like their language, their culture, their food still exists. It's a miracle. So it's an honor to be able to share their story, but we needed to share their story because people don't know who they are. You know, like that in itself is to give my platform to people who don't always get the proper time and energy in the media or anywhere. You know, this show isn't about me. This show is about the people I get to dance with and see. And that's the main goal. And that's like this driving force as we continue to make more bare feet. It's like I step more and more away from the spotlight in these episodes, the more seasons we make because of that.
I was just saying to someone yesterday, it's like, you know, my podcast is not called Mike's Podcast because I believe it's the we, not the me, that is the important thing in travel. And I hear this from you. Out of six seasons, about how many countries have you visited?
Well, I've learned over 100 dances, that's for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And that's the thing. It's 52 episodes, right? So technically, I've traveled to over 40 countries, but in the episodes, we've featured, I would say, almost 80 cultures.
Wow.
Potentially.
That's incredible.
Maybe 70. It depends, because some episodes we do like a multi-layer through neighborhoods and through cultures.
We're not going to hold you on the 70, 80. It's okay.
I know, right? But I think, you know, especially when I first started the show, and every once in a while, someone will say this, like, aren't you going to run out of dances to feature? And it's like, do people run out of types of food to eat? It's the same thing. Dance and music is part of a cultural language, a cultural identity. So many people that I interview and dance with are taxi drivers, doctors, lawyers, restaurant owners, but they're then like virtuosic musicians and singers at the same time and dancers too. So I'm trying to break that stereotype, but I'm also trying to show, especially with this new season, these two new seasons, season 5 and 6, were both filmed at the same time in New York City. And it's really showing how we're more alike than different, right? It's like dance is a universal language. We want to show those universalities so that people don't feel like we're really not that different. We really aren't.
You know, the thing I really love about this is like, the authenticity and just genuine love for what this is just continues to exude from you. You brought up this wonderful kind of roots of the word travel and kind of really piggyback on season 5 and 6, you mentioned our shot in New York. It really reminded me of the dictionary definition of travel. Do you know what that is?
What is it?
Well, according to our friends in the dictionary, travel is to go from one place to another, generally over a long distance.
Right.
And what I like to say with travel with meaning and what I believe, especially coming through COVID, is we're here to kind of change the perception of what that is. And I really believe, especially through the pandemic, it's looking at your neighborhood differently, looking at your city differently.
Yeah.
And that's what I believe, you know, you talked about in this wonderful new season coming out in New York. You're looking at what's close to you. And why is that not travel? Just because you're not getting on a plane and going far. Travel is about just these experiences and these connections. And so I love that you're really focusing on the, you know, on the local thing from that side of it. It's beautiful.
Totally. Yeah. That's exactly like the idea is This is New York. We live in one of the most diverse cities in the world. Queens is the most diverse borough in the world with the most languages spoken in a very compact place. So it's easy for us to be able to make it seem like we're traveling very far when we're not. But I do hope it inspires not only people to come to New York and see it in a different way, or New Yorkers to see their city in a different way, but also for other people living anywhere to see these local enclaves, these international enclaves that are in their communities potentially, or just someone who's not like them and have this sort of exchange. And look, I do it through dance and music. And what I like to say is, I know not everybody's into that. A majority of our viewers don't dance. And they tell me this every time they see me walking on the street. They're like, I don't care about dance, but ever since I've watched your show, I love it. And it's not the dancing's so fun, but you're showing me all these different things about different cultures. So I didn't realize how universal our stories were going to be until they were out in the world and people who never really thought about dance started to fall in love with this show. And so that's been a real joy in that process.
That's just beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and talking about these universal languages, another big one is food. I saw in season one, you went to Austria. And I just got back from Austria myself. I was there for a food festival called the Canoodle Fest.
Amazing.
Which is the oldest and most popular canoodle festival in the world. Canoodle is like a dumpling. Don't worry, listeners. I will be telling you a lot more about canoodle coming up. But I dove into your episode about Austria. And this is pretty, pretty incredible. So I know you were more in the south, kind of just outside of Vienna.
Schuhplattler Vorau.
And you did some of the knee slapping and you got into the kind of the traditional of what it was.
Yeah, platter dancing is very common in Austria, also in Bavaria. This is a dance for girls. The boys want to impress the girls, and therefore they do Schuhplattling. And who is the best, who can do it best, has good chances by the girls.
<Yeah. you know? laughs> It's true. I mean, it is impressive seeing the guys. It's a lot of hand-leg coordination rhythm, and it is very fun to watch.
It is to do. It is also fun to do.
It is. It's great. It's really fun to do.
Okay. Let's break this down, because again, I have this wonderful connection to Austria, having just been there. And actually, I went to even a Tyrolean evening, a traditional night, and watched a bunch of the yodeling and the dancing. But then to watch your episode and learning more of the backstory was just remarkable. Tell me about that experience being in Austria for you.
Yeah, so we went during ball season. So right around carnival time, Fat Tuesday, which is where we did waltzing in Vienna. And one of them was a masquerade ball for carnival. But Schuhplattler is that knee slapping kind of, you know, with the Lederhosen. And it's this group, Schuhplattler Vorau, which they're all like high school boys who are hilarious and so sweet. I met them a couple years before at this other European folk dance and music festival when I was just filming myself holding a camera for YouTube videos. And this is when I say I make new friends by dancing with strangers. I literally saw them come off stage and I asked someone who was standing there, I was like, can you just hold this camera for me? And they held it and it was like half crooked half the time. And we had this beautiful little interaction and they loved it and they were so sweet. And I gave them my card, and the head of the group gave me his card, and we stayed in touch, and then that was it.
That's amazing.
And then when I realized I was going to go back to Austria working with the local destination marketing organization, because I have to work with the local governments or else there's no way we could do this on our own, I was like, oh, I'm coming to Austria. Let me reach out to that amazing group, and let's see if we can coordinate me going to their town. And that's what we did. And they were so cute, because what you see, I'm not rehearsing with anybody. I don't go ahead of time. That's the juicy part, is like me screwing up or me laughing with them or me picking it up and them getting super excited. Like, we also thought during COVID, like, all right, show's done. No one's ever going to travel ever again. I mean, you remember, it was very doom and gloom. Mm. I also didn't realize how many people had been watching the show even more so during COVID, because there was that, they missed travel. So it was that armchair travel, literally, because we couldn't go anywhere. And so when we were filming seasons 5 and 6, my crew and I were flabbergasted because we just kept getting stopped on the street by so many fans crying, like, you got me through this terrible time. And we're all just crying. Like, it was so emotional. And then I realized firsthand, wow, we really have had this positive impact on so many people. And it was amazing that they were like, we're so happy you're making more episodes. We can't wait for them, because they saw us doing our magic. like in real life.
I love that you completely immerse yourself, you know, wearing a traditional attire no matter where you are. Do you ever bring any of that stuff home with you? Do you ever keep any of that stuff?
Yeah.
Do you wear some of it around New York?
No. You know, I'm very aware of cultural appreciation versus cultural appropriation.
Mm.
And I always ask permission to dance with people and wear the dress. And a lot of times, which has been so wonderful, people have gifted me pieces as well. I was dancing with this group, the Hanyo women from South Korea, that are these like deep, they dive for fish. It's a dying tradition in South Korea. And they gifted me one of their old masks, like from the 50s, that they would use as part of their costume. And it's a treasured piece that I have in my collection of instruments and dance shoes and dance costumes. And that's all I collect. Those are all my souvenirs. That's all I collect. I love, especially instruments, if I can hear the sound, like the shasha. My shasha from Guadeloupe is this sort of like a dried out calabash with the seeds that they put back in and they shake it. And it's a beautiful instrument. And they love that I could play it because it's not as easy as you think. So I don't ever just go around New York and like putting on these a piece here, a piece there, because out of context, that's a cultural appropriation, right? Like I'm very, 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 very conscious of that, especially being like a white girl that goes into a space. I don't want to ever assume that they're just going to be okay with anything that I ask them to do.
You know, our show is called Travel with Meaning. So I want to ask you, what does travel mean to you?
Connection. More people want to travel. And with the advent of Instagram, people are seeing travel in this accessible way that they can do that, which is wonderful. The flip side of it is what they see is as travel is getting that Instagram photo or just going to that spot and getting the perfect shot of whatever they had seen to replicate that. That's what they think travel is. But travel's really talking to people and getting lost. That's the juicy stuff. That's when you make friends in the airport where you're all trying to help each other, especially when you're young, like you have that energy and you just want to meet people and talk to people. I was talking about this with a friend. You know, all of us in the travel industry that have been traveling for quite a while, we've flexed that muscle and learned how to flex that muscle really early on. So I think when people see us, especially traveling solo or going on these trips and things happen, but you like kind of embrace the chaos. I like to say embrace the chaos because you can either have a terrible travel moment and it ruins your whole trip, or you can say, okay, this happened and now we're going to pivot and make lemonade out of lemons. And some of my best travel experiences have been things that I didn't plan at all. I make new friends by dancing with strangers. I go back to places all the time. I'm not the type of person that like, I need to hit every country. Like I've been to Ireland 12 times. I've been to Buenos Aires, Argentina 3 times. I've been to Uzbekistan 2x. I like going back because I felt a connection. I've been to the Guadeloupe Islands 2x. I'm going back again later this year. I feel a connection to a place and I make friends there and I want to see them again and I want to dance with them again. And that's a real travel experience.
You can feel it. It's exciting. I'm going to play a little word association game, right?
Okay.
So I'm going to name a couple places and you're just going to kind of tell me what comes up. How's that sound?
Sure.
All right. Morocco.
Ah, the Amazigh people.
Puerto Rico.
Bomba and Tata Cepeda, the Cepeda family.
Spain.
Obviously, flamenco, Utrera, Sevilla, all the beautiful dancing I did there.
Buenos Aires.
Ah, tango, obviously. Porteños, everybody in Buenos Aires that danced with me.
What about Venice, Italy?
Ooh, Carnevale. Carnevale is beautiful. I did a trip with my mom years ago and it was just magical.
You know, I was going to ask you what you think your most meaningful trip was.
I think Morocco was a really meaningful trip for me on so many levels. So, and I'm going to try not to get emotional when I talk about this, but my season one was an international season, which took me about 6 years to put together, 13 episodes. But it was our season premiere was the Minturno episode, which is where my family's from. And then season two was a New York season that we did, and it was about connecting with immigrant communities. And what I found, I kept hearing from our viewers was people love that story of connection. Like, oh, my family was from Ukraine and we did a little Ukraine episode, or my aunt was from Buenos Aires, or, you know, so anywhere where it connected to their culture personally, there was a strong connection watching the episode. So I thought, you know what? I only know I'm Italian. let me get my DNA tested. And we based a whole season three based on my DNA map. It was Middle Eastern. It was a lot of Greek, a lot of North African, a bit of North European. And so even if there was a little hint of it, it was on the map. So I was like, we're going there. But Morocco was on the map. North Africa was on the map. And my uncle had just passed maybe a couple months before we filmed that episode. And my uncle was the first of like my father's generation, my parents' generation that had passed in our family. He was the family member that had sponsored his whole family to come to America on my dad's side. He was the kind, I'm going to start crying. He's the kindest. I dedicated the whole season to Zio Tony because we were very close. And he was the patriarch of the family. He was this loving, he loved his family. Every Sunday in the summers, he would host at his house. All of us would get together, like summer cookouts, our whole family, like all of my first cousins and second cousins and third cousins. And he built a bocce court in the backyard and peach trees. And he loved his family. So when he passed, it was devastating to our family. So I got to Morocco and I cry a lot in my show. I get very emotional. But in this episode, everywhere I went, I saw my father's side of the family. I saw my grandfather's face in people. I saw my father's face. I saw my uncle's face. And we see that happen. And my crew, we're a very small crew. We were three people, you know, so it's very intimate. And they know when I get emotional, they see it happening and they run up and they want to grab that. And I feel comfortable enough with them that I can be vulnerable with them on camera. And it just kept happening where I felt so connected to this place because I saw my family's face in the men that I was meeting. And they were so kind. Moroccan, I don't know if you've ever been to Morocco, but the Moroccan hospitality is, they're known for their hospitality and it's such a beautiful culture. And I cried like three times in that episode. Even my director was like, Michele, you're crying too much in this episode. I was like, I can't help it. It just kept happening. And then at one point, at the very end, you see me crying again when I'm with the Amadzik people because they're singing to me and they translate. They say, Michele, you are welcome. Michele, you are welcome. And they were chanting this. And I'm thinking to myself, how on earth am I the luckiest person that I'm like living my literally a dream that I had, this vision that I had. And here we are in the mountains in Morocco with this this Amadzik tribe and they're singing and chanting to me. And it was just a very emotional film shoot, a very emotional episode. I'll never forget that.
This is beautiful. Thank you for that share. Thank you for all your emotion and all that share.
Wow. I wasn't expecting to cry today.
How just unbelievably authentic and incredible are you?
No, I really love my job. I really love my job a lot.
You created the lifestyle. It's not a job.
Yeah, it is a job. You know what? It's funny when people say, you know, like, oh, if you do a job you love, you never work a day in your life. I'm like, if you do a job you love, you work every single day of your life because you love it so much. It's true. Right?
I mean, yeah, that's kind of why we're all still here, right? I mean, you said it. Like, yeah. I love this. I don't want to do anything else. Deeply grateful for your just authentic and beautiful share.
Thanks, Mike.
That being said, we are going to kind of shift for 2 seconds here. We're going to play a speed round.
Okay.
So I know it's a wonderful transition.
No, it's good. We need lighthearted stuff. Yeah.
So we're going to put 60 seconds on the clock starting now. What is your current country count?
40.
Place you still want to visit?
New Zealand.
Place you tell people to visit?
Ireland.
Window or aisle?
Window.
Mountains or beach?
Beach.
Airbnb or hotel?
Depends.
Disco or square dance?
Disco.
Ballroom or hip hop?
Hip hop.
Kindle or hard copy?
Hard copy.
Dance club, dance class?
Both? Can I do both?
Sure.
Okay.
Sunrise, sunset?
Sunrise.
World Cup, World Series?
World Cup.
North Pole, South Pole?
Neither. Should stay away from those.
The thing you need on a flight.
My scarf.
Best travel lesson.
Best travel lesson. Talk to people.
Favorite national park.
Mount LeConte. It's in, Smoky Mountains National Park.
Favorite airline.
It was Southwest when I was doing local travel.
Favorite hotel.
The Great Southern in Killarney, Ireland.
Favorite food.
My nonna's cooking.
Favorite place in the world.
My grandmother's house in Italy.
Well said. Kelly Malazzi, I can't tell you how much we've just appreciated having you on the show. Now, we're going to put a few ways that people could listen and watch parts of Bare Feats in the show notes. Also, there's tons of clips on YouTube, Bare Feats with Kelly Malazzi. There are also entire episodes on PBS. Check out the website, travelbarefeet.com. And of course, give a follow on their Instagram, which is travelbarefeet. Thank you again, Michaela. Wonderful to connect with you.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, travelers, make sure you hit our free subscribe button. Give us a follow. We love sharing more podcast adventures with you. And please keep chasing sunsets, making new friends, and finding meaning wherever you travel. I'm Mike Scheibel, and we'll see you on the open road. Peace! If you've listened to past episodes, you know that I'm a huge advocate for travel insurance, in particular, Wanderwell. The first and still probably only 1% for the planet and B Corp travel insurance company, Aaron and his team at Wanderwell are some of the best people that I've met in the travel industry. They always get right back to me and answer all my questions. They're fantastic to deal with. Take it from me, someone who's had car accidents and injuries while traveling. I'd rather be safe for that low investment versus sorry for something majorly going wrong. Go to travelwithmeaning.com on the homepage and click Travel with Insurance for details on Wanderwell or travel insurance for good.